You are now listening to WBPPR, Big Pretty Public Radio. The following program has been made possible by Leeches. We suck. Parking lot payphones. I can't imagine why you need us, but we're here. And marijuana edibles. They're working. Just give it a few more minutes, you maniac. And now, an evening with the authors, with your host, Dana Glass. Well, hello again, loyal listeners. This is your host, Dana Glass. I am back in the WBPPR studios, and once again, hosting my beloved show. If you have been following the program, you would know there was some confusion in the past few episodes. I believed myself to have been ousted and the show stripped from me, and blamed this all on who I have devised as my nemesis, former intern, now my producer, Natalie. God rest her soul. It seems I was the victim, or the observer, or I'm trying not to absolve myself of too much here, but there were some misunderstandings, one of which Natalie was vacationing in Chile, contracted a virus, and is no longer with us, which would explain why she was not answering my emails or calls. Furthermore, it seems that my emails to the rest of the Big Pretty Public Radio staff were still in my draft file, and I forgot I had changed my number, therefore they did not recognize the calls coming to them. That was my mistake. And of course, the building was fumigated for some sort of pest problem, and because of the new phone number, I did not receive the message. I said a lot of hateful things. I did a lot of irresponsible things. I regret very much. But here I am, and we must go on with the show. And why waste any more time worrying about the past? Let's jump right in. Riley Sagebrush Walker is the operator of a found foods co-op called Wholesome Foods, as well as the author of a variety of self-published guides, including Reduce, Reuse, Regurgitate, Finders Keepers, Getting Things Cheaper, and The Foraged Porridge. Here she presents her first foray into children's poetry with her latest work, Foraging Friends. Please enjoy Riley Sagebrush Walker.
Hi, good evening. Hello. I am Riley Sagebrush Walker, and I am an urban forager. Before I begin, I want to express just how full my heart is. My cup is overflowing with gratitude and appreciation for all of you here tonight and for this opportunity to share my philosophy with you. And for those of you who aren't familiar with foraging, urban foragers get their food just like our ancestors did, out in the wild of the grassy areas in between the asphalt. We share our gifts with one another at my found foods co-op, Wholesome Foods. We collect mushrooms and herbs and sometimes small animals, but always respectfully and ethically. And some of you, I know, are already knocking it before you try it. I happen to know a very special spot in this city where morels grow every year. and you don't. Tonight is dedicated to the children. Now, I might not have cubs of my own, but I know that there are parents in our community who are fighting to protect their children from the clutches of capitalistic advertising and the industrialized school cafeteria. This book of poetry is for parents who are struggling to save their babies from single-packaged processed yellow dairy squares, deep-fried poultry pieces served in nondescript shapes, and cinnamon toast crunch. Without further ado, it is with immeasurable gratitude and humility that I present my work of children's poetry called Foraging Friends. Foraging Friends by Riley Sage Brushwalker. My friends help me forage for food. They know what's bad, they know what's good. So listen up, they know their stuff, though some of it may be a little crude. Foraging means taking what was thrown away. On refuse is what we prey. Here are the masters to save you from disaster. You'll learn something new today. Rooney the raccoon eats at night. Tread softly now or you'll give him a fright. Trash is his treasure. Secondhand helping's his pleasure. Leftovers are a raccoon's delight. Trash has a lot to offer. It's my own private food coffer. Grab a bit of that, but mind the cat. He's a bit of a scoffer. That brings us to Ferdinand the feral feline. Don't mind him, he's pretty benign. Squirrels and rats and mice are all very nice. He'll show you how to dine. I do like my rodents, yes, it's true. Be swift or they'll outrun you. In a quick swipe, they're down your pipe before they even have a clue. Now some think our next friend isn't real, but down here he's a big deal. He's Seymour the sewer gator. But we'll talk to him later and listen to his spiel. Charlie the coyote is a sight to behold, a formidable scavenger, or so I'm told. Listen to him, he's about to begin. Oh look, there's a deer in the road. You can grab roadkill with ease, any animal that you please, but leave the head or you'll be dead from Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease. Now, Owen the opossum knows how to scavenge. To Charlie, he's not much of a challenge, but he knows a thing or two about what to chew. Being small can be an advantage. You can eat what's dead lying prone, but only some of us can eat the bones. So you eat the meat and save me the feet, or your stomach will make you groan. Now see Sandra the skunk, she's a real pal, and real familiar with this locale. Just watch out for her spray, but she'll show you the way. Her advice is truly vital. Fruits, nuts, and fungi are your friend. Maybe try them all in a nice blend. But pick the baby Bella over the Morcella, or you'll surely meet your end. Now we've made our way back to Seymour, proving there's more to the lore. But what is there to eat down below the street? See what he has in store. I see tampons, grease, and wipes. I hardly ever get anything nice. But sometimes a clown will make his way down, and I can grab a quick bite. And finally, Felicia the Fox. She could sneak into Fort Knox. A master poacher is she, and so light on her feet to avoid the farmer's prideful cocks. Your neighbor Mary has some chickens. Big, fat, and ripe for the picking. Enter the coop in one fell swoop. Those theft charges ain't sticking. Now, finding food is a simple task, but at night you might choose a mask. Not everyone's wise to your disguise, and you don't want to end up in a cask. Now, go with your spoils that you've earned from your toil. Recycle the rest. Please do your best to preserve and maintain Gaia's soil. Thank you, everyone.
That Riley Sagebrush Walker, certainly a free spirit who likes to get things for free. Moving on. T. Wayne Buzzard is a man with many titles. Author, husband, stepfather, gun owner, aspiring special forces operative, and disgraced former mayor of Mount Sterling, Kentucky. Here he joins us for a reading from his first self-published horror novel, Night of the Liberal Gun Takers.
Hello, I am disgraced former mayor T. Wayne Buzzard. And yes, I am legally required to introduce myself as such, thanks to a special referendum by the Mount Sterling City Council. I am a patriot and a freedom fighter, and I have fought for many years on the front lines of Facebook. But I feel that I had no more worlds to conquer in the groups. And so, I have decided to write a novel. To become a freedom writer, if you will. This is my first foray into literature, both writing and reading. But I feel that my work stands for itself. Night of the Liberal Gun Takers by disgraced former Mayor T. Wayne Buzzard. Dedicated to my dear wife, Lucretia, you are my light and my inspiration. Definitely not dedicated to my good-for-nothing adult stepson, Jody. I know you're the one who's been stealing my Percocets. Chapter 1. Dwayne Eaglehawk took a long drag off his cigarette and stared down from the window of his office. All his years as an elite sniper with the 1st Special Forces Operational Detachment Delta didn't prepare him for the challenges he would face as the mayor of a small town. He was the cool mayor. He shared all the funny email forwards with everybody, and he greeted everyone with a hilarious, "What's up?" And he even threw out the law that banned smoking inside City Hall. Still here, he found himself looking out his window at a crowd of lazy, entitled millennials holding up signs and shouting his name in anger. And for what? As mayor, Dwayne had passed a city ordinance that required everyone to say Merry Christmas. Of course these snowflakes would get bent out of shape about it. His advanced strategic skills could have predicted that. He hadn't anticipated the fact that they would still be whining about it 6 months later, when a group of libs refused to say Merry Christmas to the flag at the town's Labor Day picnic 2 days ago. He had authorized the police department to use non-lethal force. "I'm a reasonable man," he mused. "Non-lethal force, that's a compromise. That's awfully generous when you think about how disrespectful they're being." He stomped out his cigarette on the rug and threw on his signature leather jacket and cowboy hat. As he walked past the mirror, he couldn't help but notice how badass he looked. With his tactical phone holster and Oakleys, he looked just like the Matrix. Hell yeah. As he walked to his Ford F-250, he sipped up his jacket. It was awfully cold for this time of year. So much for the theory of global warming. He lit another cigarette. Suddenly, out of the corner of his eye, he saw movement. He spun on his heels just in time to dodge as a female protester ran up and swung at him with her sign. She was dumpy and gross and probably a lesbian. "I'm literally crying right now," she screamed as Eagle Hawk deftly tore the sign from her hands and put her in a tactical chokehold. He had his gun on him. In fact, he had more than one. He would never say how many guns or where, but he was always prepared. He was a responsible gun owner, and this situation didn't call for lethal force. He kicked that screeching lesbian in her big dumpy butt and broke her sign over his knee and threw it into the back of his truck. "You won't get away with this, Mayor Eagle Hawk," the lib shouted as he hopped into his truck and rolled coal all over their asses. Dwayne Eaglehawk arrived home just as the sun was setting. He had the perfect life, with a beautiful home in a neighborhood with no crimes and no thugs playing their rap crap. He walked in the front door to see his super hot wife, Becky, was just finishing dinner. Becky was hot, kind of like Rachel Ray or that wife from King of Queens, but hotter and with bigger titties. "I made you steak dinner again tonight, Dwayne. I hope that's okay." He slapped her on the ass and hung up his coat and hat. As he sat down in his favorite chair, she brought him the TV tray. "Do you want to watch your show while you eat?" Dwayne Eaglehawk nodded as she set down a plate in front of him with a steaming baked potato, a delicious ribeye steak, and beans. Dwayne usually didn't care much for vegetables or ethnic food, but he developed a taste for beans when he was hunting El Chapo in Central America with Delta Force. Becky knew how to make them so they weren't too spicy. Becky put on his favorite show, The Walking Dead. "Dad? Dad, are you home?" A voice called from down the hall. Dylan was Dwayne's biological son, not some kind of bastard from a previous marriage. He was a large boy who loved to say, "Yes, sir," and "Yes, ma'am." And he was an Eagle Scout and the quarterback of the high school football team and not at all like some sort of disappointing adult stepson who just hangs around spending all day listening to Asian boy bands and leaving my PlayStation controller laying around so it's not charged. "Dad, can you give me a ride to school? I have to get to football practice early so I can lead the team in a prayer before the principal shows up and tells us it's illegal to pray in America now." Eaglehawk grabbed his keys and jacket. "Let's roll." As his large son went to throw his football equipment in the back of the truck, he paused. "Dad, what's this sign doing in the truck?" Dwayne laughed. "Oh, I had to teach some angry lib the meaning of the word freedom earlier. That belongs in the trash." He grabbed the broken sign and looked it over. "U.S. out of my uterus," it said. There was a weird drawing below the words. "Daddy, what's this a picture of? Is this supposed to be the Chicago Bulls symbol?" "No, son, I guess it's time I had the talk with you. Libs don't know how to draw a pussy." As he carried the sign to the garbage can, he noticed small print at the bottom. Printed by the George Soros Corporation for Global Domination through paid protesters. Eaglehawk recognized the name. It was a secret evil organization that only a few smart people smart enough to watch Fox News 8 hours a day would have heard of. Lucky for him, he was one of them. He felt good throwing that sign into the trash. It felt good knowing that his mayor, Dwayne Eaglehawk, had banned recycling in town to own the libs. Suddenly, his superior hearing and reflexes detected a noise coming from the wooded area behind the house. Dwayne grabbed his tactical flashlight from his belt and shined it into the woods. For a split second, he saw it, a pink hat and a set of blue asymmetrical bangs ducked down behind a fallen log. "Who's out there? Show yourself!" The sound of a branch breaking came from 20 degrees to his 12. He spun the beam of light just in time to see another pink hat dart into the darkness. "I'm warning you, I have a license to carry concealed weapons. I'm a Tier 1 operator with tactical experience, and I am not afraid to stand my ground. You do not want to mess with me." He heard laughter coming from the forest. It wasn't good laughter like the kind you hear at a Larry the Cable Guy show. It was weak and annoying and gay sounding. "No, Mayor Eaglehawk, you're wrong. We do want to mess with you." The laughter was coming from all around him in the forest. That was enough for him. It was go time. He reached for his gun. The steel was cold, but something was unfamiliar. It was soft and wet. As he pulled it out in the pale moonlight, he saw something unexpected. The gun was white and floppy and smelled like shit. The voice in the forest was closer now. "Surprised, Mayor?" "Who are you? What do you want?" he shouted into the darkness, his flashlight scanning for the source of the voice as he reached down to his boot to retrieve his other gun. Instead, he found his leg holster full of soft beans. Soy, he thought to himself. My God, somehow they've replaced them with soy. Suddenly, a figure stepped out from the darkness into the pale moonlight. Looking for this, it was the dumpy lady, the protester from earlier. She was holding his firearm. I took it from you when you stole my sign, and that's just the beginning. We've come to take all of them, all the guns. And then when there's no more guns, we're going to steal the Constitution and replace it with a new one, written by the editors of Teen Vogue. She lifted his gun to her mouth and bit the handle off like it was made of butter. Her eyes began to glow red as she slowly ate his sidearm. Dwayne turned and ran for the house, not because he was scared, but because he was always planning and strategizing and had to establish a position of tactical superiority. Dylan, he shouted. Dylan, get back in the house. The libs are finally at it. Don't worry, father, answered his son's voice from the driveway. I'm okay. Eagle Hawk rounded the corner and froze in sheer terror. Dylan, his large American son, the all-American boy, who never watched weird Japanese cartoons on the computer. It was nothing like some dumbass adult stepson who erases all your Pawn Stars on the DVR so that you can watch some sissy shit called Steven Universe. Dylan, the perfect son, was standing in the doorway. His face was covered in a patchy beard. His mouth was contorted into a dumb, open-mouthed smile. He was wearing a shirt that said, I stand with Planned Parenthood. We're all going to be safe now, Daddy, safe from the guns. Here, try a soy burger. Dwayne shouted, no, and punched Dylan in the soy face. He sprinted through the garage and into the kitchen. Becky, where are you? Something horrible has happened. It's the libs. They've come for the guns. He ran through the home, locking the doors and shutting the windows. Oh, Dwayne, don't be silly, came Becky's voice from the dining room. Come in here and finish your dinner. I'm serious, Becky. George Soros sent some kind of gay robots to come take the guns. They already ruined Dylan. We need to get to the panic room before... He walked into the dining room and saw it was already too late. Becky was floating in the air like some kind of witch or something. And her hair had been cut real short, and it looked gross, like Rachel Maddow. She used to have long hair, and she looked like a princess or something. Now she looked so gross. She was wearing baggy clothes, too, and her makeup was gone. Come sit down, Wayne. You need to finish your beans. As she spoke, a large bowl of beans floated into the air, but they weren't the good kind of beans. They were soybeans. Eagle Hawk perfectly roundhouse kicked the floating bowl and it hit Becky right in her gross ugly face. You can't resist progress, Dwayne, she shouted. The patriarchy has had it good for too long. It's time for women to have a seat at the table. He ran to the basement and entered the code for the panic room. 1776, Freedom's birthday, the day George Washington invented liberty. The reinforced steel door swung open and he quickly closed it behind him. He paused to catch his breath. His nerves were shaking. He had to steel himself for what came next. His personal copy of the United States Constitution was framed on the wall. He touched his hand to it. Founding fathers, give me the strength to do what I must in the name of liberty. He moved to the gun safe. At least his AR-15 was safe from the libs. It wasn't an assault rifle. That's just some name that wimps who don't know nothing about guns made up. It was really just a really badass-looking hunting rifle. The dumbocrats had tried to take it from him earlier, and he'd locked it up in this safe to keep them from taking it. Plus, with the modified bump stock for full auto-firing capacity, it'd pretty much obliterate bone and meat, and it made a pretty shitty hunting rifle. He turned the dial on the safe. 9-11-01, a number he would never forget. He opened the safe and looked inside and then let out a manly scream and jumped back. Dwayne Eagle Hawk, the Special Forces sniper with over 7,000 confirmed kills, stumbled backward and nearly shit his stomach into his breeches. His AR-15 had melted into a glob of scrap metal at the bottom of the safe. As he approached the safe again, he noticed something he had never before. A tiny inscription engraved along the edge of the safe read, Gun melting safe made in China by Nike Corporation, enemy of America and supporter of evil football player Colin Kaepernick, patented by Nike, a subsidiary of MSNBC and George Soros. Rachel Maddow also invented this safe. Just then, the secured landline in his bunker rang. The phone was not connected to the grid. It was a private line that could only be accessed from inside the house. Slowly, he picked up the receiver and answered. Hello? There was a moment of silence, just the sound of someone on the other end breathing. Then an evil, familiar voice spoke.
Mayor Eaglehawk? This is Barack Hussein Obama. That's right. My middle name is Hussein, and I love it. Let me be clear. If you like your guns, you can't keep them. There's no more guns. Now come out of your bunker and report to the gay marriage concentration camp.
Dwayne Eaglehawk dropped to his knees. The unthinkable had happened. The libs had created a world without guns. And a world without guns is a world without solutions to problems. He would have to invent a new way of solving problems. Surely there was some other way to kill people. That's when he realized the libs had revealed their own weakness. White genocide. The liberals have been white genociding Americans since the olden times with their political correctness. Telling people what they can and can't say was the same thing as using guns to slaughter them. And if he was going to survive this liberal apocalypse, he was going to have to think like a lib. He was going to have to get offended. Thank you.
I do feel there is some sort of conflict of interest in playing that last clip, given who I am, what this show is, and what we represent. But we do not discriminate. All are welcome on our program, unfortunately. Dorothea Weathermeyer is a 6-time widow, the author of over 100 novels and abduction survival guides, including The Touch of a Gray, How Many Hands Does the Spaceman Have?, and Keeping Up in a Conversation with Extraterrestrials, A Spicy Guide. Now she will be reading from her upcoming novella, Venetian Sands, The Awakening. This is Dorothea Weathermeyer.
Well, hello. Hello, are you dead, like my husband, or are you alive? Dead, I'm used to it, no problem. Like you said, yes, I'm a 6-time widower, and pity is welcome, so if you have it, please blanket me with pity. But what I'm here to talk to you about tonight is what happened after my husband's died, which is that I began being a victim or a pleasure slave of aliens. I've been abducted over 1,800 times. That's right. I close my eyes, I wake up, I don't know where I am, but I do know that I like it. Now, I must tell you that some of what I am about to read is a little bit risque, although we did just hear about pussy, so you'll probably be fine. But that is involved in these stories, so. Now, I do want to tell you that I need you to pay extra special close attention because I did take the evening off of Taco Bell tonight, which is where I do work. So if you ever hear a slow southern drawl ask you if you want that crunch wrap, you'll know that you're speaking to Dorothea. I take you now to my latest vacation, where I discovered the Venusian sands. The story begins in my living room. The time is 5:45 p.m. I've just finished my 14th White Claw of the day. I feel buzzed, but not drunk. I could drive home if I needed to. Good thing I am home. One success marked off. I look out my window wistfully, waking for the saucer to take me home. Rather, to their home, the Venusian sands. Venusian sands don't feel like human sands. The sands that will invade your body if you lay on them for too long with no clothes on. I think, am I wearing clothes? I look down, I am. Good. Sometimes I forget to put on clothes. That's embarrassing when you go to do things and you think you're wearing clothes and you're not. And your neighbor, Mr. Collins, says, Dorothea, you're not wearing clothes. And you say, yes, I am, Mr. Collins. What are you talking about? He says, no, Dorothea, I see your nipples exposed very clearly. And you say, you know what, John Collins, just because you're a second grade science teacher doesn't mean that you can talk down to me. Only to realize that you are indeed nude and have locked yourself out of your apartment. Nevertheless, I wait for my lover, gray-skinned, slippery-handed, three fingers only. But my God, why did God give us five fingers when three so clearly did suffice? I look at my pinky finger and my thumb, and I think, why don't I just cut them off? Aliens seem to do fine without them, and then I remember. You're still on Earth. You're not yet laying in the Venusian sands. Venusian sands feel like being in a kiddie pool of warm gummy worms, which might sound gross and sticky, but let me tell you, it's sticky in the best way. You can sit up and move over and go down a slide, and it's a lot of fun. And then when you get to the bottom, you make love to 44 aliens in a row, but it's fine. You will get a cold, but you will recover. Nevertheless, I'm still in my living room. Dr. Phil has just started. Is this alcoholic mother of four ever going to speak to her children again? They need her. I think, my God, I get up. I have a pineapple White Claw waiting for me on the counter. Good thinking earlier, Dorothea, I say. Good thinking. Check off another box on my success calendar. Which is just a calendar, and if I remember to write on it, it's considered success. May 22nd, five boxes ticked. Get to work, Debbie. Dorothy. Debbie, Dorothy, I run into the bathroom in a fright. Who am I? Who are you? I punch the mirror. I go back to the couch. You've overreacted. Nevertheless, I look out. I wait. Where are you, lovers? All my husbands are dead. I need to feel whatever 6 times 44 fingers are on my body. I realize then I never learned to do mental math. I always thought it was math for those who are insane. Nevertheless, I pine for the fingers and I look up into the sky. It's 5:15 now. How dare time be so slow? Father Time, I never had a father. You don't tell me what to do, you piece of shit clock. I throw my clock out the door, but the door is still closed. Damn it, Father, not again, I say. You do get over the cold. Nevertheless, I wait. 6 times 4 is 24, and 6 times 4 is 24 again, and God damn it, I still don't know how to do mental math. Maybe someday. I fall asleep in my doorway. Z, 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 Z. Z, this is the deep sleep. This is the REM stuff. Z, 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 Z. The Z's go on for quite a while. I'm asleep for a while. Okay, we're going to speed it up here. Oh my God, my time's going off. Stop. Don't repeat. Don't repeat. Don't you dare. Father Time again, trying to tell me what to do. Okay. I wake up. My lover Zolthrak is standing above me. Six fingers ready for action. I say, Zolthrak, wherever you'd like to touch me, you can. And he says, Dorothea, I merely came here to get some flaming hot Cheetos. We don't have them on Venus. I look around my home and there are streaks of three flaming hot Cheeto paw prints. All of my snacks are gone. I fall back asleep immediately. I'm a stress sleeper. Z. This goes on for a long time. Buy the novella if you're interested. I wake up again. I'm alive, untouched, very sad. Nevertheless, I look out my window again and wait for my times of being touched by three fingers multiplied by however many on the Venusian sands. Thank you so very much and have a fantastic evening.
Quite erotic fantasy. Wow. Well done, Dorothea. Our final author for this episode is a historian and presidential speechwriter turned DJ. He performs, well, not so much across the country, but some places sometimes, and we are now going to hear his newest work, America's Greatest Speeches Remixed. This is DJ Jazzy Jefferson.
Patrick Henry, March 23rd, 1775. The battle, sir, is not to the strong alone. It is to the vigilant, the active, and the brave. Besides, sir, we have no election. If we were base enough to desire, it is now too late to retire. There is no retreat but in submission to slavery. Our chains are forged, their clanking may be heard on the plains of Boston. The war is inevitable, and let it come. I repeat, sir, let it come, oh, let it come. Gentlemen may cry, peace, peace, but there is no peace. The war is actually begun. Our brethren are already in the field. Why stand we here idle? What is it that you gentlemen wish? What would they have? Is life so dear or peace so sweet to be purchased at the price of slavery? Forbidden Almighty God, forbidden Almighty God, forbidden Almighty God. I know what course others may take, but as for me, or give me liberty, or give me death.
Thank you.
That was, of course, Patrick Henry's great speech to the Second Congressional Convention in Virginia. Of course, most people only know that last line. Next. JFK, March 25th, 1961. There is no strife, no prejudice, no national conflict in outer space. Its hazards are hostile to us all. Its conquest deserves the best of all mankind. But why the moon? Oh, why the moon? Oh, why the moon? They will ask you why climb the highest mountain. Why 35 years ago fly the Atlantic? Why? We choose to go to the moon. We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things. Not 'cause they're easy, but because they're hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because the challenge is one we're willing to accept. Ooh. Ooh. One we are others too, others too. We choose to go to the moon. We choose to go to the moon. We choose to go to the moon.
DJ Jazzy Jefferson, I must say, history never sounded so good. This will conclude this edition of An Evening with the Authors. I'd like to thank all of the authors who took part in this episode. I'd like to thank the White Rabbit Cabaret in Indianapolis, Indiana, for hosting our regular show on the first Tuesday of every month. I'd also like to thank Sellerman's in Hazel Park, Michigan, where we recorded Miss Dorothea Weathermeyer's piece. If you'd like to see one of our live shows, the best way to know where we are coming is to follow us on social media platforms. We're on Facebook at Fake Authors and on Instagram at Fake Authors Indie. That is at Fake Authors INDY. I'd like to thank Eric Salazar for providing our theme music entitled Soul Search. And more than anything, loyal listeners, I would like to thank you for spending an evening with the authors. I am Dana Glass. Good night.